This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, May 27th, 2003. Who is next on America's list? That's a question asked by George Jonas in the National Post in Canada. The question now is, who will be next to be threatened? Was asked by Algeria's foreign minister, Abdelaziz Belkacem. This was also asked by William Pfaff, writing in the International Herald Tribune. The most important question is, what country will be next? And Patrick Buchanan, President Nixon and President Reagan's speechwriter, and a presidential candidate himself, asked on March 26th, what's next after Baghdad? Ralph?
Maya, the theme that we developed in the past programs, and indeed the premium for our listeners for the fundraiser for WBAI, is World War IV. I should call attention to the important article in the Washington Post on April 13th of this year called "The Fire This Time." For scholars, Iraq is clearly part of something bigger. How would we know if we were already in World War III? You couldn't look it up in the encyclopedia. Not yet. But Iraq is only the first part of the first front, like Afghanistan and Lower Manhattan, and there are other fronts, Korea, the Taiwan Straits, Iran, and Syria. Nukes, chemicals, germs, millions of people at stake. The focus may be now on Iraq, but those who are making policy have a bigger picture. The eagle is on the wing. This is World War IV.
And Ralph, to talk about World War IV, our premium for the WBAI Fund Drive is World War IV, and it's still available. It's a special 3-hour program. And let's look at what is World War IV. On November 16th, 2002, former CIA Director James Woolsey declared that the U.S. was engaged in World War IV, World War III having been the Cold War. He was speaking at the University of California, Los Angeles, as part of a tour sponsored by a new organization, Americans for Victory Over Terrorism, that Woolsey had founded, along with Bennett, the former drug czar, William Bennett.
And compulsive gambler, William Bennett.
That's right. Now, Woolsey had stated...
And the partner, let me just add, of Mario Cuomo in that effort, the liberal Democratic former gubernatorial candidate for New York, just so we make very clear that it's Republicans and Democrats who are involved in this ruling class project of permanent war.
Now, Woolsey had stated that the United States would be at war for many years. Now, these are the same words we've heard echoed by Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and President George Bush. So I recommend that all of you get to your phone during this Taking Aim program and call to get your copy of World War IV. It's a $100 premium. 212-209-2950. Ralph, let's go on with the particulars.
Well, Maya, in particular, I want to cite this article, "The Fire Next Time," because in discussing World War IV, it elaborates upon some work that was done by Dennis McBride, who is president of the Institute for Policy Studies. McBride had done a particular study on bio-cyber terrorism, and he, in this study, picked up on the theme of World War IV as a complex adaptive system attempting to impose a world economic order by spreading disease engineered, and I'm quoting from the Washington Post, by spreading disease engineered to be incurable. Too wild? You cannot help but notice, the Washington Post continues, that the killer virus SARS began its rampage on cue as the United States was invading Iran. We do not rule out that this is a weapon.
Invading
McBride,
Iraq.
Invading Iraq.
Iran
you.
Is on the drawing board.
Iran is next on the agenda. Yes, invading Iraq, the article states. And he quotes McBride, "We do not rule this out as a weapon," speaking of SARS. The Potomac Institute of Germ Warfare Specialist briefs Vice President Cheney weekly with germ war weapons scenarios. And it goes on. Should a United States city get nuked, it will not be the worst case, says military historian Frederick Kagan. If terrorists get an effective biological agent effectively dispersed, casualties will be enormously greater. And we have to anticipate this and prepare the preemptive weapon. This coincides with a PBS eight-part documentary on Armageddon about the use of chemical and biological weapons. And it is very clear, this article is without any mystification, the biological weapon arsenal of the United States is a forward weapon and instrument of World War IV. And in elaborating this, they cite Gregory R. Copley, the editor of Defense and Foreign Affairs Strategic Policy, writing shortly after 9/11, and the journal specifies 130 heads of governments who are amongst its readers, and it talks about the targeting of countries across the stage, across the world stage, writ large upon the global stage, preparing for a forward, preemptive, aggressive American policy. And Copley quotes the, quote, strategic thinker Elliot Cohen of the Johns Hopkins Knightsey School of Advanced International Studies in Washington, and a key member of the Defense Policy Board advising Rumsfeld on grand strategy. And the article states, Cohen's ideas pack a particular wallop. In fact, Bush read his book, Supreme Command, Soldier, Statesman, and Leadership in Wartime, in which the book cites how Lincoln and Clemenceau and Ben-Gurion and Churchill overrode their timid generals to impose an overarching plan for war on a huge scale. Cohen's allies are Richard Perle, Thomas Connelly, and Michael Ledeen at the American Enterprise Institute, Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz, William Crystal, Daniel Pipes at the Middle East Forum, Michael Vickers at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessment, and the Clinton CIA chief, the article says, R. James Woolsey, the very personnel who have articulated, developed, and presented the strategies of World War IV. And he goes on to cite Norman Podhoretz and Cohen in a piece in Commentary Magazine, How We Will Win World War IV. It is from this group of analysts, neocon hawks, Likudniks, at the center of the stage, that Woolsey adapted the idea of World War IV, the article states. The particularization of this is very interesting. The 9/11 war was ruled out as the rubric. World War IV was preferred because, it states, the preparations for World War IV began well before September 11th. We settled on World War IV because the war we are preparing will be global, involving violent effort, requiring mobilization of expertise and resources. It will be long, it will have ideological roots, and it is important to note that the central figure, along with James Woolsey in the articulation of this imperial design for a permanent war on an enormous scale, was none other than Leon Firth, Vice President Al Gore's National Security Advisor. He designated World War IV as a large and interesting idea, a good fit for the way we see what is happening.
Now, another articulator of World War IV, and Woolsey is specific about targets being Iran, Iraq, Syria, Sudan, and Libya, and as well other analysts extend that further to North Korea, China, and much of Africa, besides Sudan and Libya. But the other articulator is L. Paul Bremer, the former chairman of the National Commission on Terrorism, who was appointed recently by President George Bush to be the civilian administrator in Iraq.
And Maya, it was Bremer, as we cited in our World War IV document, who was the point man at the UCLA lecture where Woolsey and his associates presented the World War IV, along with William Bennett, the World War IV scenario, taking it to the campus, as it were, from Columbia to UCLA and beyond.
Now, the New York Times on May 10th in an article by Evil Dalder and James Lindsay entitled American Empire, Not If, But What Kind. They stated in this article that American forces are being deployed in a grand crescent surrounding the greater Middle East, from the Balkans southeast to Djibouti in Africa, east through the Persian Gulf region into Pakistan and Afghanistan, and north into Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan. This is the new American Empire. And they mention that American Empire was mentioned nearly 1,000 times in news stories, and that bookstores are filling their shelves with new tomes on the subject. So let's look at this new American Empire, the basis of World War IV, hand in hand, World War IV and American Empire, as well the category of terror, because it is through this concept that the United States and democracy and freedom are being terrorized that the U.S. can stage these battles and have American forces deployed throughout the world in over 100 countries throughout the world. William Kristol, the editor of the conservative Weekly Standard, told Fox News, and he's a frequent person on Fox News, quote, "We need to err on the side of being strong, and if people want to say we're an imperial power, fine." Now, other commentators go further. Max Boot, who's the author of The Savage Wars of Peace, told USA Today, quote, "In Iraq, if it means imposing the rule of law, property rights, and other guarantees at gunpoint, if need be, then that's the way it should be." So we have here over and again the articulation of the U.S. obligation to be the world empire. Now, there are historic roots for it, and in this article in the New York Times, they elaborate on just some of them, such as in 1903, Teddy Roosevelt engineering Panama's rebellion against Colombia, and the very next year, 1904, he asserted the Roosevelt corollary to the Monroe Doctrine, that Washington not only had the right to keep European powers out of the Western Hemisphere, it also had the right to exercise, quote, an international police power against any country in the Americas engaged in what he called chronic wrongdoing. And over the next three decades, the U.S. Marines engaged in long occupations from the Dominican Republic, Haiti, Nicaragua, and this went along with the Roosevelt Doctrine, which again was promulgated by Franklin Delano Roosevelt with the occupation of Nicaragua, to restore, quote, the ties of civilized society. Ralph?
Maya, what we're describing here is the continued politics of an imperial power. And I think we ought to take note of the fact here that the crisis has not changed, and it is not, if you want to borrow from the lexicon of the Bush, of the Bushmen, it is not the evil that is new. For as you cite from Franklin Roosevelt and from Woodrow Wilson and from Herbert Hoover and from William McKinley and from Theodore Roosevelt and from Grover Cleveland and from Henry Adams and on, going backwards now, imperial policy has been the thrust of capitalist hegemony across this continent and then reaching out abroad. The Washington Post article that I was citing before with respect to the fire this time has an interesting corollary thesis called The War of Ideas. Ideas have consequences. You can see it very clearly with the American Enterprise Institute. Pearl, Cohn, Woolsey, they sit and they prepare global strategy. In a black coffee briefing on, quote, the war, the road to war and beyond, they're interested because they state the bureaucrats and the Pauls who are promoting the policies of the world's only hyperpower, including the president, need to know what to think. They need to be handed them the guidance, the context, and the vision. And Pearl, Cohen, Woolsey, and the American Enterprise Institute orbit have Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld's ear. They have Vice President Cheney's ear. They have the president's ear.
Now, talking about the president, Ralph, I always like to return to the national security strategy of the United States of America, the articulation of this policy by President George Bush. In it, he states, "These values of freedom are right and true for every person in every society, and the duty of protecting these values against their enemies is the common calling of freedom-loving people across the globe and across the ages." And what he means by the freedom-loving is the free enterprise system, that is capitalism, and what he calls democratic values. But of what we see taking place in the United States, it's the abrogation of democratic values with legislation such as the Patriot Act and other corollary legislation. But to go on to this with his preemption, the right of the United States, as he says, to defend the peace by fighting terrorists and tyrants, he says, "We must be prepared to defeat our enemies' plans using the best intelligence and proceeding with deliberation. History will judge harshly those who saw this coming danger but failed to act."
Maya, just as this very important article to fire this time in the Washington Post doesn't hesitate to track the utilization of SARS and bioweapons and the ways in which the timing of these putative outbreaks coincide with forward policy of the new imperium of the World War IV strategists, the article states there is a new American imperium. The American Enterprise Group is its intellectual Praetorian Guard. 20 AI scholars are in the Bush administration, and if Cohen isn't on today's panel, he is the key figure. This is the author of the very category of World War IV. He is a central member of AEI's Council of Academic Advisors. It is no accident, the Washington Post states, that President Bush delivered his major speech at the American Enterprise Institute in February on American vision for a new Middle East, from Morocco to Bahrain and beyond, for a reverse domino theory. And now we find that at the AEI Black Coffee briefing, Woolsey sat to Pearl's left, and to the right was Michael Ledeen, the articulator of the, as we cited in our World War IV document, the precise timetable for the strategy of each Middle Eastern country in its turn, including Saudi Arabia, specifically Saudi Arabia, and then Egypt. But before ending this important article, I want to cite a further statement that I find extremely important. Quote, back in 1997, Richard Pearl recalls, "We predicted that terrorists would hit the World Trade Center again. They had already struck in 1993. And that when this occurred, we would throw all caution to the winds. When this occurred, we would throw all caution to the winds. Up to now, we've been measured and sensible. But when biological weapons are used on us and hundreds of thousands of American deaths occur, we will no longer be measured or sensible. And we got to win." World War IV, indeed.
Well, behind all this rhetoric, they may talk about terror and its staged terror operations, as we've documented over and again on Taking Aim.
The false flag of 9/11, the false flag of biological menace, the false flag of an imperium on the march.
Now, this was elaborated by Benjamin Netanyahu, the former prime minister of Israel, who, along with these neocons, created the ideological foundation for permanent war conferences that began in the late 1970s and again in 1984 that incorporated both Democrats and Republicans, and the former President Bush attended both, as well as Secretary of State George Shultz and many prominent journalists. But behind all this, this drive for empire is the control of the world's resources. And an important graph appeared on IslamOnline.net, and it's Iraqi and world oil. And it's a graph of the proven reserves, the oil endowment for the leading countries. And foremost is Saudi Arabia. And then we have Russia and Iraq. Now, these are the proven reserves because if you look at what they expect in Iraq, it is comparable to Saudi Arabia of over 250 billion barrels. And then we have the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Iran, Venezuela, the United States, Mexico, China, Libya, Nigeria, Kazakhstan, Norway, Algeria, Indonesia, Canada, and the United Kingdom down very far below. So we have in the Middle East the most accessible oil, the proven reserves since the 1930s, and it's all oil that's the easiest, the cheapest to get to. So let's take that into consideration when we look at who's next, because this is a statement that came from the Pentagon, from an administration official. We're not going to just take a left turn or a right turn and go straight into Syria or Iran. But the routes to Damascus and Tehran are being carefully studied at the Pentagon. So carefully studied that Douglas Feith, the defense undersecretary, is said to have been working on a new policy document designed to show that Syria's support for terrorist groups is a threat to the Middle East. Quote, "It's clear that the policy group in the Defense Department is intense on eliminating the present Syrian government as a factor," said Walter Lang, a former Middle East intelligence specialist at the Pentagon. In fact, it isn't just at the Pentagon, but senators have been drafting legislation to impose sanctions on Syria. This is the Syria Accountability and Lebanese Sovereignty Restoration Act, and the legislation was introduced by Representative Elliot Engel, Democrat of New York, and Ileana Ross-Lehtinen, a Republican of Florida. So we have both sides of the House, and they mandate economic sanctions against Syria should Damascus not end its support for terrorism, occupation of Lebanon, and possession and continued development of weapons of mass destruction. Now, so far, Ralph, this legislation, which was introduced in April, has 85 co-sponsors in the House, and Representative Engel is confident that it will pass. Now, when we think about the language here, it is very similar to the very language that the administration used when it was preparing for the assault against Iraq.
Because they utilize the category of terror, the false flag operations that illuminate and that embody the application of the category of terror ad infinitum. Now, there's an interesting group. It's actually, a right-wing group. A group that has a publication called the Magazine of Future Warfare, G2MIL.com is their website. And they ran an important piece in May called The Cost of Empire, in which they delineated just exactly what is going on with the wholesale usurpation of resources, devoting them exclusively to an enormous military campaign. Quote, "Military spending is higher than Cold War war levels. In 2 years, the increase of the federal government in the military sphere is greater than in the previous 8 years. Millions of Americans now accept a neocon ploy requiring more money to defend against a few putative Arab fugitives than the entire Soviet Union during the 1980s, and they are buying into the fiction that another terror attack, unquote, is more threatening than total nuclear war was with the Soviet Union. This neocon strategy, this article continues, is based upon H.L. Mencken's revelation many years ago when he wrote, "The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary," unquote.
Now, Israel's number two military intelligence official, Brigadier General Yossi Kupferwasser, told the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee on March 31st that Iraqi chemical and biological agents and long-range missiles may have been hidden in Syria. Similar accusations were aired by Prime Minister Sharon back in December. Now, what's interesting here is that here we have Kupferwasser and Sharon talking about Syria hiding Iraqi chemical and biological weapons, and the very next week you have on March 28th, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld saying that Damascus had been channeling goggles and jamming devices to Iraq and also was hiding Iraqi weapons of mass destruction.
Well, the USA Today article by Barbara Slavin on April 10th set forth how the Mossad and the Israeli state were preparing the stage for the next stage, if you like, the next steps in the permanent war. Some see victory extending beyond. The fall of Baghdad is a victory, but a group of foreign policy hardliners linked to Israel realize that this is but the first step in an audacious plan to reorder the Arab world and global institutions. And in the article in the USA Today cites Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz as moving in lockstep with the Israeli Likud, with the Mossad. And they cite Jim James Woolsey, the Pentagon Advisory Board, Wolfowitz, World War III morphing into World War IV, reiterating the themes that we have developed here. And then the article concludes, "Wolfowitz has prepared us. U.S. forces will be moving into Syria. The timing of that is a decision for the president and the Congress." And indeed, this delineation of policy and the timetable was prepared in speeches before the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, APEC, that the future of Iraqi oil shipments would no longer be exported through Syria, and that Syria would be the target for the next military occupation. And John Bolton, the Undersecretary of State, chose to deliver his own policy statement about Syria and Iran at an APEC convention, quote, "In the aftermath of Iraq, dealing with Iran will be of equal importance, indeed of priority, before we deal with North Korea."
And Ralph Haaretz is specific. This is the Israeli Daily. First on April 13th and following on April 14th were articles, "Israel to the United States, now deal with Syria and Iran." And then on April 14th, in a background article by Bradley Burstyn, "Shock and Assad, Israel's wish list." And these articles speak of the National Security Advisor, Israel's National Security Advisor, Ephraim Halevi, discussing regional implications of the Iraq war. And what they mean, specifically, Haaretz says, "Israel will suggest that the United States also take care of Iran and Syria, quote, because of their support for terror and pursuit of weapons of mass destruction." And Defense Minister Shaul Mofaz reported, this is what he said explicitly, "The Americans have taken out a yellow card on them," meaning Syria and Iran, "and they were right to do so." And by a yellow card, he's referring to a soccer referee's warning card for players who have broken the rules of the game, and if infractions continue, they will be expelled. And Mofaz sent to the United States a long list of demands for the U.S. and Syria, for what the U.S. Should do against demand of Syria. And it's interesting to look at these demands because this is what has been what Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and Secretary of State Colin Powell have been putting forward in the press. One, to remove the threat of Hezbollah in South Lebanon. To distance long-range rockets moving Hezbollah away from the south, up to dismantling Hezbollah, stopping Iranian aid to Hezbollah via the Syrian ports, halting the granting of cover of respectability to the terror headquarters of Hamas and Islamic Jihad based in Damascus. Now I'm quoting from the Israelis, from which they dispatch orders and funding to Palestinian terrorist organizations. And the list goes on and on. Ralph?
There has been a systematic preparation of the attack on Syria in the mass media. It's a psyops operation of the Mossad and of U.S. intelligence services. It is the softening up. Syria is the top U.S. target for regime change, writes the Daily Telegraph on August 4th. The main subject on the agenda of the Belfast summit yesterday between Blair and Bush was Syria, the Pentagon's next target for regime change. And the article states significant equipment, assets, and expertise was transferred from Baghdad to Damascus, the first signs of which appeared in August. It is possible that Iraqi nuclear scientists are all in Syria and the weapons of mass destruction, and Saddam's regime is retaining part of its army there. And then by March 29th, U.S. accuses Syria and Iran of hostile acts, warned last night by Donald Rumsfeld to stop helping Saddam's forces because they will be held accountable for these acts. And it goes on to prepare for a strike. By April 2nd, we learned from World Tribune that the U.S. commandos had destroyed Iraq's pipeline to Syria, an overt act of war. Quote, U.S. Special Operations Forces blew up an Iraqi pipeline delivering over 200,000 barrels of oil a day to Syria. The Kuwaiti Al-Raj Al-Am Daily reported on Wednesday that U.S. forces sabotaged the Iraqi oil pipeline to Syria in an operation in northwestern Iraq, and it details how 250,000 barrels of oil a day are put in jeopardy, placing the Syrian regime in a position of crisis. On April 15th, UPI confirmed oil to Syria shut down. U.S. forces disabled pipelines delivering oil from Iraq to Syria in violation of a U.N. embargo. Donald Rumsfeld confirmed, I can assure you that the oil flowing from Iraq to Syria is shut off, Rumsfeld stated at a Pentagon news conference.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you over WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. Now, WBAI is a listener-sponsored radio station, and not very often, but we do ask for your support through financial contributions, because many of you have been supporting the station for a long time in many, many ways. Now, at Taking Aim, we have prepared a special 3-hour premium for this WBAI fund drive. It's not available anywhere else. In World War IV, we examine the role of the category of terror, document significant relationships among those who promulgated a virtual who's who and the complex network and web, and explain the significance for workers and the oppressed throughout the world. It's a 3-hour special, and it's replete with documentation, as you are come to expect from Ralph and me on Taking Aim. So that's World War IV. It's $100, and the number to call for the WBAI premium line is 212-209-2950. You can make other contributions through the Internet, but to obtain the premium of World War IV, you must do so by calling 212-209-2950. This is the last week of the fund drive, so this is your opportunity today to get World War IV. Now, we're going to go on to the other avenues, the other targets that we're discussing today. But first I want to look at the New York Times, because despite some hesitancy that you might see from the New York Times editorial, the New York Times is in lockstep with this agenda, this drive for empire, with the putting forward of all the disinformation and the lies, first with Iraq and now with regard to Syria and Iran. The Road to Damascus was an editorial on April 15th. Quote, "The Bush administration is right to be alarmed and angry about Syria," writes the New York Times. "There is reason to believe that both military equipment and potential suicide bombers have been sent from Syria for use in Iraq against American troops. Now American officials are convinced that Syria is permitting Saddam Hussein's top lieutenants to escape across its border. As the United States begins to exercise its new role as godparent of a new, freer government in Iraq, it will have to figure out how to handle many hostile neighbors, starting with Syria."
This has been prepared, and this is indisputably, whatever the soft cup, hard cup disavowals that punctuate the articles and the documentation about the plans for attack on Syria, this has been the plan longstanding. The Independent on April 14th, "America's attacks on Syria simply confirm its Middle East intentions. There's something unseemly about the way the United States is setting up Syria as the next threat to world peace and security long before the guns have fallen silent in Iraq. These are long-standing plans. They are on a timetable. Syria is being held responsible for myriad unproven iniquities. Central to the accusation is that Syria is a menace and Syria's government should be removed." And the article cites the series of neocon and American Enterprise Institute and Israeli preparations for this policy plan, Haaretz. Haaretz, the important article by Uluf Ben, "Israel to U.S., Now Deal with Syria and Iran."
And Alexander Haig, the former Secretary of State, the general who was so notorious for his role in the Vietnam War, he happens to be serve on the board of directors of Newsmax.com, along with Arno DeBorgrave of the Washington Times and former chief foreign correspondent of Newsweek. And as far back as 2002, in January of 2002, Alexander Haig had specified that Syria should be attacked prior to Iraq. Well, they didn't listen to Alexander Haig at the time, and they went for Iraq first.
It's six but and one now, half dozen of the other.
But now they are looking at Syria and also Iran. As William Crystal, the neocon and editor of the Weekly Standard, said, "Is Iran the next target?" Jim Loeb, asking, "Is Iran the next target?" in the Iran Press Service, is talking about William Crystal. And Crystal said that we are in a death struggle. Those are his words, death struggle with Tehran. And he urged the Bush administration, quote, "to take the fight to Iran through covert operations, among other measures." "The liberation of Iraq was the first battle for the future of the Middle East," wrote Crystal. "The next great battle will be for Iran." Syria, Iran, both actually are on the drawing boards with actions, as we've seen in Congress, with the move for sanctions against Syria. And recently, the cutoff of all discussions with Iran. There have been negotiations in Geneva over various nuclear policies, but all that has been canceled. Ralph?
Without missing a beat, presidential candidate Senator Joseph Lieberman, vice presidential of candidate with Al Gore in the last election. Sunday, May 25th, Lieberman, Iran needs regime change now. And he conjoins that to the statement that the Bush people are stonewalling a 9/11 probe. And along with Senator Graham, Senator Lieberman is taking the view that the Bush people are hiding evidence and information pertaining to 9/11, and they're outflanking the Bush people from the right by stating that the 9/11 information that's being withheld is the complicity of Saudi Arabia, indeed the direct involvement of Saudi Arabia and Iran in the events of 9/11, preparing the way for the continuation of World War IV, and Lieberman states the U.S. must immediately back a policy of regime change in Iran. Iran is ripe for regime change, he told Fox News on Sunday. It is of particular interest of to the people of the world, and most particularly to the Iranian people, that we implement and impose a regime change now, the top Democrat urged. He stated, military action is an important element in this plan. There is no nation in the world where the government is more anti-American and the people are more pro-American than Iran. That's the equation. We have to act on it, and we have to act now.
Now, acting now is exactly what the White House and the Pentagon are doing. They were supposed to meet last Thursday, and the meeting was postponed, and they're going to be meeting today, Tuesday. Officials will meet, as reported in the Washington Post on Sunday, and Reuters then distributed the information worldwide, that officials will meet at the White House to discuss Iran strategy with Pentagon officials, pressing for action that could lead to toppling the government through a popular uprising. Now, the Washington Post said that the administration had received, quote, very troubling intercepts before and after the Saudi Arabia bombing, and supposedly it's the these intercepts that have initiated the administration's new stance towards Iran. Now, who's going to believe this is a new stance if you listen to World War IV and all the programs that we have had over the past year and a half? You see that this is a long time policy, but they're putting it forward as a new stance. The intelligence, these very troubling intercepts, suggest that Al-Qaeda operatives in Iran were involved in the planning of the bombings in Saudi Arabia, according to the Washington Post, which, like the New York Times, promulgates this strategy for empire, the disinformation that is the rationale for U.S. military operations in 100 countries around the world. Now, the Iranians themselves are opposed to Al-Qaeda. They have said over and again that they consider Al-Qaeda to be which is based in the Sunni movement of Islam, to be a threat to Iran itself.
Not in the least out of the perception, and it's been articulated in Tehran, that Al-Qaeda was funded by the Central Intelligence Agency, created by the Central Intelligence Agency, penetrated and monitored by the Central Intelligence Agency. They took note of the fact that the chief operative, the figure who was accused of engineering the blowing up, as we cited in our previous program, the embassies of the United States in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam, and an organizer of the bodyguards of bin Laden, was a high-level Central Intelligence Agency operative in constant and continued contact with the agency and with the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Ralph, that's a very good point, because the Iranian government has for many years said publicly that the United States funded the Al-Qaeda, and before that the Taliban, and promoted the Taliban in Afghanistan as a direct threat and target against Iran.
And indeed, as we had cited earlier, and it's worth reviewing once more, the article in the San Francisco Chronicle, The Man Behind Total War in the Middle East, referring to Michael Ledeen and the fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, the employee of the Pentagon, the State Department, and the National Security Council, the co-worker at the National Security Council of Robert McFarlane, who was with Oliver North, the key figure in the Iran-Contra affair, undertaking that he documented in a book called Perilous Statecraft, an Insider's Account. Now, in his book, The War Against the Terror Masters, Why It Happened, Where We Are, and How We'll Win, he articulates the longstanding designs of the United States military and of the neocons in particular of, quote, taking Iran. Calling for regime change, he stated, it is time now to focus again on Iran, the mother of modern terrorism. Where was the statement made? Where was this strategy outlined? Where was the timetable articulated before the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, JINSA, on April 30th? The time for diplomacy is at an end. We are prepared for a free Iran, a free Syria, and a free Lebanon. Ladin set up the Center for Democracy in Iran, an action group for producing regime change in Iran. And in his book, Machiavelli on Modern Leadership, he stated, creative destruction is our middle name. We do it automatically. We shall export our revolution. Iran is first on our list. And in his 1996 book, Freedom Betrayed, How the United States Led a Global Democratic Revolution and Walked Away, once again he articulates how Iraq, Iran, and Syria are first and foremost the nations where we will implement regime change, a process which he stated will be a violent one, and components of what he described as total war that destroys the enemy's military forces, that brings the enemy society to a complete point of decision, a reversal of their cultural trends, and indeed the purpose of total war is permanently to force your will onto another people, articulates Ladin in his book in 1996, a new policy, a casus belli of the moment? No, a Mein Kampf of prepared aggression, a Mein Kampf of imposed imperial will, a Mein Kampf of imperial war, a Mein Kampf of pretext for this. The final decision, he writes, of whether the United States will inaugurate its military action first in Iran, Syria, or Lebanon, may not yet have been made, but it is only a question of which and when. And indeed, the article concludes, given the fervor and influence of these men with the guns, Americans should not be surprised when Ladin's pronouncements come true, unquote. The San Francisco Chronicle on May 14th.
Ralph, you mentioned the JINSA conference. Then the Jewish Forward on May 16th in New Front sets sights on toppling Iran regime by Mark Perlman of the Forward staff, speaks of a conference that took place May 6th, and this was with the American Enterprise Institute, and it was entitled The Future of Iran. And it was during this event that Ladin also articulated the proposal for Iran as the next target. But at this conference was ex-CIA head James Woolsey again, former Reagan administration official Frank Gaffney, former Senator Paul Simon, oil consultant Rob Sohani. Now, I mention these four because they have set up a new group called the Coalition for Democracy in Iran. You might say a sister organization to the one that Ladin has set up.
And a key figure of George Shultz's Americans for Victory in Iraq.
That's true. We have a proliferation of these fundraising opportunities for covert action and for reshaping the American people's perception of the policy, so that when military action is in the works, people will think that this is a defense of democracy. Now, Michael Ladin, as we said before, with his organization, is a key supporter of the Shah's son, the Pahlavis, and for the reinstitution of the monarchy in Iran. So we have here setting the stage, and the United States is trying to give, through Congress, $50 million for funding this committee. It's already through the Senate Foreign Relations committee, and it's Republican Senator Sam Brownback, and it is moving forward through Congress.
It was spelled out in the Financial Times, Maya, on May 9th. Iranian monarchist exiles the next rulers of Iran. Who else? Michael Adeen of the American Enterprise Institute has stated that Mr. Pahlavi is the suitable leader for a peaceful transition from dictatorship to democracy. Yes, the absolute monarchy of the Shah is the suitable facility for transition from dictatorship to democracy. Democracy indeed. Widely admired inside Iran despite his lack of avidity for power or wealth, Adeen promotes the Pahlavis. And indeed, Pahlavi and Shalabi of Iraq, share similar backgrounds and similar backers. The exiled heir to the Peacock Throne is at an earlier stage in terms of winning the funding from the Bush administration, but with the American Enterprise Institute behind him, the results are not in doubt. Where was all this developed and articulated? Why, before the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs board meeting, where Ladin and Raoul Mark Yurecht, who advocates threatening clerics in Tehran by military means, laid out the timetable and the plan for the seizure of power and for regime change in Tehran.
So we have here, again, the repeat of the disinformation about Iraq. Bioweapons, development of missiles, hiding the terrorists. Look just at some of the newspaper articles. The Washington Post on May 15th in Joby Warwick. Iran said to be producing bioweapons, and they're reporting on a press conference of the Mujahideen al-Khalq that said that anthrax weapons are the first fruits of a program begun secretly in 2001 to triple the size of Iran's biowarfare program, and that the group had exposed already a massive nuclear facility that was built near the town of Natanz to make enriched uranium, which can be used both for commercial nuclear power plants or to make nuclear weapons. And then, again in the Washington Post, May 26, Iran, Al-Qaeda members in custody, but along with them being in custody, you have May 17th, top Al-Qaeda harbored in Iran, new attacks ordered from there, according to the Newsday reports and also reports in publications throughout the country, spreading this disinformation.
You're 100% on target, Maya, not only in the United States. The Pentagon and the neocon and the World War IV plotters have suffused the media of the world. Here, The Guardian on May 16th. The United States accuses Iran of stockpiling chemical weapons. Washington is accusing Tehran of stockpiling nerve agents, pursuing aggressively a chemical weapons program, that Iran has aggressive bioweapons efforts underway targeting the United States. And Washington accused Iran of stockpiling blister blood and choking agents and nerve agents. U.S. diplomat Stephen Rademacher stated before the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons at a meeting in The Hague last month that Iran is a menace to the world, is preparing these blister blood and choking agents, and must be stopped. Iran has vehemently denied the allegations and indeed has stated that they are precisely the fabrications that were drummed up to prepare for a war in Iraq. And by the 16th of May, the Guardian in London was carrying the story that the chemical and biological weapons that are imputed to Iran are taken as a given. By the 24th of May in The Guardian, the Pentagon has set its sights on a new Tehran regime, proposing regime change in Iran, now stating that Al-Qaeda leaders are coordinating terrorist attacks on the United States and on Saudi Arabia from Iran. The Pentagon plan involves overt means, anti-government broadcasts transmitted to Iran, covert means, support for Iraq-based terror groups inside Iran and in the capital itself, spelled out, indisputably clear, a Mein Kampf once again, of an aggressive campaign to extend World War IV to Damascus and to Tehran.
Today, we looked at the targets, Syria, Iran, but there are other targets, too, that have been elaborated by the Bush administration and, along with the Bush administration, many in the Democratic Party. Turkey, Libya, countries throughout Africa, China, and Cuba. 100 countries throughout the world is where the United States has bases and has developed relationships with some of these countries to attack the very people who are struggling for self-determination. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. I want to remind you again that our premium World War IV is available this week and this week only. This is your last opportunity to call 212-209-2950 for this important three-hour special World War IV.
And next week, brothers and sisters, next targets and who's next will encompass Africa, as well as North Korea and China and Cuba, the continued saga of a permanent warfare, a permanent oppression, which the people of this country must come to resist in an organized manner.
We want to thank all of you who've contributed to the WBAI Fund Drive. And if you haven't, please do so now, 212-209-2950. I also want to thank our engineer here at KPFA, Wesley Burton, and Bradley Wiedmeyer, our research associate who helps us in uncountable ways. Now, you can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net and check out our website, www.takingaim.net. .info. That's right. TakingAim.info. We'll be with you next week.